you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Oh yeah,
I hate when you open the episode like that. I really do.
I love it, Sophie. It makes me feel just
I miss the atonal shrieking, to be honest.
No, I like an almost sexual expression of satisfaction. That's how you start
so
a podcast, Sophie. That's how you start a podcast. And to be almost sexual with me, my guests today, Dan and Jordan of Knowledge Fight. Dan and Jordan, on a scale of 1 to 10, how uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, you're just buying in. Excellent.
I was doing Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yes, he was. I was doing straight up, that's what I sound like during sex.
Yeah, that's going to be very polarizing among the audience.
Why?
People will have opinions.
Why?
People will have opinions.
Why?
I'm not going to read those opinions. For my own mental health, I don't do that very often.
Less polarizing, though, the gracefulness with which Randy Macho Man Savage would drop an elbow off the top rope.
That's something everyone can appreciate.
Indeed.
Yeah, most on our next episode, we'll have me and the guests all slowly eat cereal in front of the mic. So we'll see what people hate more, the sex drugs or the cereal.
Cereal.
See, you could have them name the cereals.
People
too,
might kill us
accidentally
for
become
cereal.
A proud boy.
Robert, I'm just,
guess
I'm,
the cereal that I'm eating.
Robert,
is this Cap'n Crunch? Is this Crunch Berries?
That could be
what
our new show, Sophie.
Oh,
guess the cereal.
That's the whole show.
There's not enough money in the world to get me to sit through that.
But there is enough cereal.
Chompa.
Oh, my God.
We can do this. So, you know, part two, right? We should probably get back into the story. So by February of 1947, Fifield has built this list of minister representatives, right? That's what he calls the members of spiritual mobilization, because it's specifically an organization for religious leaders. And he calls these kind of, you know, you might call them foot soldiers or whatnot in his war to make Christianity capitalism. He calls them minister representatives.
Repristers.
Repristers. And he starts doing this in 1944. He has about 400 minister representatives in 44. By 1947, there's more than 10,000 of them. With NAM money behind him, he's able to get out his message and keep spiritual mobilization together despite its meteoric rise. He finds great success in arguing against the pagan statism of socialist politics rather than against a social safety net, and for the dignity of individual man as a child of God rather than against the responsibility of rich people to pay taxes. Clergy begin to flood Fifield's Los Angeles office. His phone rings off the hook for weird, like, and it's usually people, like, when people call, it's citizens who have, like, come across his organization somewhere, and they're writing him because they want to get sent political tracts. That's a big part of what spiritual mobilization does, is it sends out these right-wing zines and books from authors like Garrett Garrett. And Garrett is G-A-R-E-T is his first name, and then his last name is spelled the right way. Have you heard of this guy?
I don't think so.
No, I have not. I've never heard of anyone being named Garrett twice.
Yeah, it's a bad decision, obviously.
That's twice as many times as is the wrong number of times.
But Robert, is it a typo, or is it spelled, the first name spelled differently than the last name?
It is. It is the first name spelled differently.
Is
than the
it
last
a
name.
Key and Peele bit?
I actually kind of like the different spellings.
Yeah, the first name
that got me.
The first name has one R, one T. The last name has two R's, two T's.
Two R's, two T's.
Yeah.
Is it Garrett? Or is it Garrett Garrett? Yeah,
I don't like it. You gotta give him that.
I have questions.
Garrett Garrett is like an Ayn Rand type figure. Like he's a libertarian fiction.
Do you mean awesome?
Writer. Yes, I mean, okay. Based as hell.
Cool.
So he writes he writes some of the most insufferable sounding libertarian fiction I've ever heard of. You can find all of his books today hosted online for free by the Mises Institute if you want to read Garrett Garrett. He was big in the 20s and 30s. And if the summaries I'm reading are anything to judge by, like, it is some of the most insufferable shit ever. One of his books is called Satan's Bushel. And here's how the Mises Institute describes Satan's Bushel. What is Satan's bushel? It is the last bushel that the farmer puts on the market that breaks the price, that is, reduces it to the point that wheat farming is no longer profitable. The puzzle that afflicts the wheat farmers is that they sell their goods when the price is low and have no goods to sell when the price is high. Withholding goods from the market is one answer, but why should any farmer do that? What is the answer to this problem? Working from this premise, then, as implausible as it may sound, but the central figure in this book is the price of wheat. It is the main source of drama. The settings are the wheat pit at the Chicago Exchange in the Kansas wheat fields. Yes, he wrote a book where the protagonist is the concept of wheat as a commodity.
I fucking love how bored Satan has to be all the time. Where he's like, listen, guys, we've got nothing going on today. I don't know. Let's fuck with the price of wheat.
Yeah.
There's no more relatable protagonist than the price of wheat.
The price of wheat? Yeah. The hero's journey of wheat. Wheat initially rejects the call to adventure, but then accepts it after finding a mentor.
And the resolution, of course, is subsidies.
Yes.
It all works out.
It's perfect. It is also just...
Wheat of Darkness was my favorite book.
Very Cream telling. Because Garrett Garrett is huge. He's one of the most popular authors that Fifield's distributing. It's very telling of these guys' ideology that, like, you hear, hey, we gotten so good at farming wheat that it's basically free. And instead of being like, oh, good, no one will ever not have bread again. The dream of human beings for thousands of years finally realized. It's, oh, my God, then we won't make money. it's unfortunate the way that the system works. A lot of drama in the book hinges upon someone who's apparently poisoning all of the wheat as a favor to the farmers, like poisoning the wheat to kill it so that it will make wheat more valuable to help the farmers. Like, this guy sounds like a lunatic.
And the name was Monsanto. This is crazy. This is the most amazing book I've ever heard of. Predictive programming!
If I understand correctly, is the person who's poisoning the wheat a heroic character?
I think so. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I didn't read this fucking book. I did not read this fucking book. I read a summary of the book by the Mises Institute, which, by the way, y'all will enjoy this. In its biography of Garrett Garrett, the Mises Institute notes that he was, quote, as noted for his critiques of the New Deal and U.S. involvement in the Second World War. Now, right? You hear that? The only war for whom being against is inherently suspicious.
No. It's not that they're against World War II. Is that they're against the concept of war?
If you are against World War II, I had better see a Quaker somewhere in your biography, or I am making some dire assumptions. You know,
the Mises Institute is the insufferable fucks I've ever run across. Like they've come up in some of our stuff before, and
yeah,
one of the things I note in particular is like their Like, they have a long argument on their website about why you don't have a positive obligation to feed your children.
Mm, like, that's the good shit. That's yeah. the good shit. That's the libertarian stuff I yeah. love right there. Fucking yeah. when you've got, like, Fred Koch arguing about the fact that people should be able to sell themselves into slavery and fucking, yes! yeah, yeah, that's the good shit.
If you can't, then do you really own yourself?
Yeah. It's really funny, too. Like, it's shameful that you've got something as batshit wacko as that is like slavery is good because otherwise you don't own yourself, and this guy decides to write a book about fucking wheat prices. Like, come on, man. There's so many cooler places to take this.
I mean, what's Trading Places about? But orange prices, it's mm-hmm. the same.
It's not the central character.
No. It's the really. Main character, right? I feel like also there was a gorilla. That's mm-hmm. not okay.
Is this wheat book available on tape?
I don't know about that, but it is in the public domain. Dan, you could do a free audiobook of the wheat
book.
Let
me write this down. I'm going to do this.
Satan's Bushel.
Oh, man, that is an MST3K movie waiting to happen.
I had to note, we're going on a bit of a tangent with Garrett, but it is important to get some texture as to like the kind of material that Spiritual Mobilization is putting out. And when I saw that Garrett had been an opponent of U.S. involvement in the Second World War, I did a little bit more digging, and I found an article from Garrett titled "War Has Lost Its Pockets" from the Saturday Evening Post in 1940, where Garrett argues a lot in this article. One of the things he says is that it wouldn't make sense for the Nazis to use forced labor because that's bad for business.
Sure.
Nazis, they wouldn't use forced labor. That's not very efficient.
I'm going to be straight with you. Indisputable. Yeah. Indisputable.
Great
that's
argument.
Free market. Free market, man.
Nailed it, Garrett.
I've heard that same sort of like tone from libertarians about slavery in America as well. Mm-hmm. Like that. It's,
people wouldn't
it's
mistreat their
weird.
Slaves. That doesn't make economic sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay,
cool.
Guys.
Anyways, my favorite book of the Bible is Exodus. I don't know why, but.
So. Spiritual Mobilization sells this guy's books like hotcakes. Now flush with cash, Fifield decides to draw in new ministers by making the gospel of free enterprise profitable. In October of 1947, he holds a national sermon competition with the perils to freedom as a theme, and he offers $5,000 in prize money. More than 20,000 ministers submit entries, which is 15% of all clergymen in the nation. So this is now... This isn't just I sent a letter to a bunch of people. This is I have made a connection. They are engaging directly with the and making propaganda of their own now, which is a really smart way to do this, right?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Has part of that been like because everything that we're talking about now is purely economic, and currently in the present day, all of that is tied in with a real bloodthirst. Mm-hmm. So in this time period, was that separate? Was there still that undercurrent of like, and you're gonna have to kill infidels, like that kind of thing? Or
oh yeah, that's there. I mean, these guys are very, we'll talk, the Korean War comes into this a little bit. You know, this is immediate post-war period. There's not quite as much of that, just because everyone's kind of tired of fighting for a little
bit. Everyone's already fought out.
But once we
several million died, whatever.
Once we start getting into these wars in Korea and Vietnam, yes, these guys get very pro killing the communists. And, you know, this is
cool.
This gives birth to the chunks of the conservative movement that are pro Rhodesia and all
cool,
that stuff.
Cool,
you know,
cool.
Of
love
course,
it.
Yes.
Yeah,
So Pew and the NAM are so happy with this thing that Fifield carries out, getting all these ministers to engage with this propaganda, that they double his annual budget. Pew generally takes a lead here in soliciting donations from his rich friends. He sees this as a success, and he wants to, like, a crack has been made in this wall of leftism in the clergy in America, and he wants to shoot as much fucking water into that crack as possible to try to expand it. So he tells his
hot.
Fellow rich guy friends, it is hot, that spiritual mobilization should be at the top of the list for all their donations, citing the polls that he paid for that showed ministers the most influential molders of public opinion. But as this experiment rolled forward, there were some on the left who could see the shape of was starting to take form. I'm going to quote now from Kevin Cruz's book, One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America. Quote, in February 1948, journalist Kerry McWilliams wrote an acidic cover story on it for The Nation. With Save Christianity and the Save Western Capitalism chants becoming almost indistinguishable, a major battle for the minds of the clergy, particularly those of the Protestant persuasion, is now being waged in America, he began. For the most part, the battle lines are honestly drawn and represent a sharp clash in ideologies, but now and then the reactionary side tries to fudge a bit by backing movements which mask their true character and real sponsors. Such a movement is spiritual mobilization. McWilliams explained to his readers the scope of its operations, noting that it now had 9 organizers working in high-rent offices in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, and had distributed hundreds of thousands of pamphlets to by pro-business authors for free. But no one knew who was funding the operation, McWilliams warned. There had only been vague statements from Fifield that non-ministers who have a common stake in the America and Christian traditions cannot contribute service, and that it was only natural that they give substance instead. In McWilliams's withering account, Fifield came off as a charlatan who prostrated himself before the apostles of rugged individualism to secure his own fame and fortune, and in return, prostituted himself for their needs. So, and this is how it's framed at the time, because they don't have access to like the letters and stuff I've been reading. They don't know that this is all funded by the NAM, right? That's right, not right, super right. obvious to anyone writing it. But he can tell from what Fifield's saying that like there is some shady business interest in spiritual mobilization. Like he's speaking about it.
I always love more than anything whenever people use adjectives that are thoroughly inadequate for the job of like, you know, he's fudging things. Mm-hmm. Like, no, there's a multi-million-dollar campaign behind a lie.
Yeah.
Like, this is not fudging things. He's not like, oh, it's not $50, it's $100. This motherfucker is killing everyone.
Yeah, I mean, obviously at the time, too, like, McWilliams doesn't have all that data. There's only so much you can say in an article without being sued. But you can see he's like, he knows what's happening. He just doesn't have the proof of it, right? Like, and
right.
He's trying to like put that out as clearly as he can.
Something's rotten in Denmark.
Ooh,
yeah, and the
National, Dutch East India Company.
Ooh. Yeah, this scares the hell out of the NAM, right? That like this guy's kind of on to them, and that he's attacking Fifield as like a charlatan. So they mobilize a bunch of rich guys, including the president of the Republic Steel Corporation, to send out mass mailers to other business owners and executives defending Fifield. And as a fun fact, the guy who sends out this mass letter is Charles White, the president of Republic Steel. Charles White presided over the 1937 Memorial Day massacre when 10 Republic Steel union workers were gunned down by policemen for striking. So that's the guy. He sends out a letter to a bunch of rich guys calling Fifield one of my personal friends to solicit donations for him.
I was literally about to say Republic Steel sounds like a dystopian future name for like the overarching. And then the next thing you said, murdered 10 people. And I'm like, well, you know what? Let's not even. Yeah, there we are.
Well, I'm going to read a quote from this letter that White writes defending Fifield. Our company has supported this crusade generously for some years, and we believe in it deeply, the more so since I have read this irresponsible article and see how the opposition feels about spiritual mobilization. White then went on to ask the people he'd written this letter to, why don't you send a check at once? And in short order, more than $100,000 had been donated by business owners to spiritual mobilization in like a couple of days. It's great. Like he's doing the whole, they're trying to cancel us. Like the liberal media is trying to cancel us. You need to send us money. Very ahead of his time, you know, trailblazer.
Just such a, like, you're getting money from people. If you get $100,000 from people, it's people who do not give a shit about money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in 2 days, that's crazy.
Yeah. And that, again, that's like a million or two. That's like that's a couple million bucks then. Yeah. So spiritual mobilization itself responded to this criticism in the nation in that time-honored tradition of smart shitheads. It got bigger and louder. In 1949, it launched The Freedom Story, a 15-minute radio program presented by Fifield. And here's Cruz and Politico describing this.
Yeah.
In the original scripts, Fifield made direct attacks on Democratic programs at home, but his lawyer warned him they would lose the public service designation that gave them free airtime if he were too plain spoken with partisan attacks. Instead,
hey,
he advised...
Buddy. You're going to go down the Mike Lindell route. You got to stop. You got to stop. I can see the future. You're going to become Mark Lindell.
No, that's not even what he's worried about. He's fine with him becoming Mike Lindell. He doesn't want him to have to pay for this ad by it being too political.
Overhead.
Right.
So he advises instead that Fifield should basically, instead of, don't talk about Democratic policies in the U.S. That's not allowed. You'll get, you know, we'll have to pay for it then. But if you talk about foreign examples of the menace
the
of
Reds.
Creeping socialism, then that's not political.
Hey, why don't why don't we own Venezuela? Like, I mean, honestly, like, look into your heart. Okay.
So anything outside the United States, not politics.
No, nope. Not politics. Can't be politics.
Let's start the
American.
Crusades, baby. Mm-hmm. Nonpartisan. Right,
exactly. We just talked about how nonpartisan the Crusades were.
Yeah.
Good times. So since Fifield's NAM backers had lost a lot of friends in media, it was child's play to ensure that this freedom story got free airtime in over 500 stations. So this thing again, and they're like, you motherfuckers could pay for this, but you know, it also sounds better if it's not political, right? It doesn't sound like I'm a guy making a right wing like ad if I'm just talking about the history and the dangers of creeping socialism to freedom in these other countries. You know, it's a smarter way to do it. So this is a big hit, gets out to a lot of earbuds, and Fifield's next big move is a 4-day conference in 1950 with 25 of the most popular ministers in the United States and an assortment of big business leaders, including Crane and Pugh. A pair of economists, Friedrich von Hayek and Ludwig von Mises, were also present.
Yeah, I bet they're great.
The Austrians are here.
Mises
is back in the mix.
In between writing articles about how you don't have to feed your kids and how labor is fine.
What are you doing feeding your kids? You're wasting your time.
He shows up here. Good on him.
He sits up. Perhaps children should starve. And a rounds of applause come from the ministers and business leaders in the audience.
Sounds like freedom.
Hey, listen. When I went to and took my dog Jake to basic dog training, the dog trainer was very specific. She said, you have to work for your paycheck. And now it makes perfect sense to me. Mm-hmm. People are dogs is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. That's a big part of what's happening at this conference. So Fifield describes the goal of this symposium as to, quote, define the conflicts in this critical period of civilization and to establish freedom's answers to these problems. Tentatively, the agenda will cover such subjects as the relationship of liberty to Christianity, equality and morality, competition and corporation, and the application of true Christian principles to present day problems. So this is a big hit. It gets the most popular preachers in the world or in the country together with all of the richest people in the country and a bunch of libertarian economists. And they all start being buddies with each other and they start like spreading their ideas around. And these ministers go back to their gigantic churches and like start talking about some of the things they've encountered. Social Mobilization launches a magazine called Faith and Freedom, which was billed as a place where ministers could write in and express their views freely, debating with one another over the issues of the day. But almost all of those debates were really just screeds against social welfare, right? There's not like a left-wing, right-wing debate. It's like, how much should we stop feeding people?
Right.
And this is actually where we get into one of the precursors of the modern right-wing, like, bugbear that Satanists are secretly behind socialism. I think this is the start of that. And I want to read a quote here. This is from one of the ministers who wrote for Faith and Freedom in an essay he did called Pagan Origin of the Social Gospel, which he argues that pagan-influenced strands of Christianity, and he includes Unitarianism here,
sure,
had led to a, quote, shift in faith from God to man, from eternity to time, from the individual to the group, from individual conversion to social coercion, and from the church to the state. That like pagan origin of the social gospel, that like the idea of a social welfare state in any way, he's not calling it Satanist, but it's not Christian. It's fundamentally anti-Christian is where that Satanism argument starts, I think. Yeah.
It's a transition toward Satanism because it's God, then humans, then Satan's next.
Yeah, totally. You know, I feel for these people, right? Because you used to be able to just call someone a witch and people would believe you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now you have to do this whole dog and pony show with all these lies. You have to do all this pagan shit. You can't just say people who like socialism are witches, let's kill them.
But to be fair, they did do empirical tests about whether or not people were witches.
Well, they were heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they were able to be crushed by rocks.
In certain cultures, there were things you would feed them, and if they die, they're not a witch, but if they survive, they're a witch.
Right.
Or vice versa. It works both ways.
Get a job or have a giant rock tossed on you. I feel like this is very simple.
So in 1950, the Republicans, you know, after this is after several years of NAM and Fifield working together, in 1950, the Republicans have a huge win at the midterm elections, right? And this is taken by Pew and the others in NAM as evidence that what they're doing is working, right? Like this shit is paying big political dividends. More funds poured into spiritual mobilization. Fifield celebrated in a letter to the head of General Motors, writing, quote, "We are having quite a deluge of letters from across the country indicating the feeling that spiritual mobilization has had some part in the awakening which was evidenced by the elections. Of course, we are a little proud and very happy for whatever good we have been able to do in waking people up to the peril of collectivism and the importance of freedom under God."
Meaning, now that the Nazis have been gone for a little while, fascism can totally be popular again.
Let's move back into fascism. Freedom under God, because
there's nothing more free.
Is a tiny number of people owning everything, and that's like it's under God because that's what God wants, you know.
And also, definitely not paying taxes.
That's true.
Yeah, well, for sure, God does not want you paying taxes.
No.
Yeah, yeah. What's the point of having serfs if you have to pay taxes to help them live?
Let them die when they're too old to work or too sick to work. Yeah.
I bet they have more than one. That'll be twice as many of them.
We did get there eventually.
Do you have a positive responsibility to help people who are dying? Mises says no.
No. No, of course not. And in fact, you have a responsibility to maximize your own profit by letting people die sometimes.
Absolutely.
That's
I read an essay.
Yeah. So, now empowered and properly organized, Fifield decides to lead his most ambitious charge ever. He's going to change the 4th of July forever. And this is the thing people don't often get. It didn't used to be like a big, big thing. Like, it wasn't always like the hugest deal in the world, the 4th of July. It has become that in recent decades, and a big part of why it is what it is, especially on the right, why it is like such a almost a holy day. It is kind of a holy day to millions of Americans. That really starts in this period. But you know what's starting in this period right now?
Goods and services!
That's right. That's right.
Oh!
And it's never going to stop, baby.
Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So, for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Ah, we're back, and I have just learned the news that Build-A-Bear Workshop launched an After Dark series of erotic teddy bears.
Oh, so, Fuck-A-Bear? Love
yeah,
that place.
Fuck-A-Bear.
Yeah, yeah, so great.
Yeah, this is my whole world now. Sophie, cancel our next 10 podcast recordings. I have a new thing to do. Oh, they seem to mostly just be Build-A-Bears in pajamas with wine.
I wouldn't openly say that on the internet, Robert.
Too bad. What? What?
I have a new thing to do talking about Fuck-A-Bear.
The Fuck-Bears. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Dan and Jordan, you guys can bounce. I got to deal with this bear situation.
That's fair. That's a fair bear situation. Fair. So, what's a more care bear than a fuck bear?
A fair bear situation. horny teddy bears. I want a teddy bear that's ready to Netflix and chill.
Well, see, this is just society maintaining balance. The M&Ms become less sexy.
Yeah,
Build-A-Bears
have to get more fuckable.
Yeah. Do you know what's crazy? The Care Bear that had a vulva on its stomach got cut real quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is weird.
Mm. There's a.
Oh, now I'm in trouble.
I mean, that would basically just be a fleshlight. That, you know, Build-A-Bear could make some money with a fleshlight Build-A-Bear.
Hey, I think Build-A-Bear's already made a bit of money.
Look, this is free cash we are leaving on the ground. We need a more fuckable teddy bear. Look,
right.
This has been the problem since time immemorial.
The problem with this riff is that it hasn't gone long enough.
And once again, the furries have been on the cutting edge of fuckable
always
teddy bears.
True. Always. True.
Well,
are they a sponsor?
Yes. Yeah, here? We are sponsored by the concept of having sex with anthropomorphized teddy bears.
AdamandEve.bear.com.
Yeah, that is really the primary reason this podcast exists. Big Fuck Bear. That's our sponsor. Sophie, really staying quiet here. So, when we last left our actual episode, our buddy, Mr. Fifield, has decided he's going to change the 4th of July. And to explain what his plan is, I'm going to quote from Kevin Cruz again. To mark the 175th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, they proposed for the week surrounding the 4th of July a massive series of events devoted to the theme of freedom under God. To that end, in June 1951, the leaders of spiritual mobilization announced the formation of a new committee to proclaim liberty, the CPL, to coordinate their 4th of July freedom under God celebrations. Despite its apparent spiritual emphasis, the true goal of the committee was advancing political conservatisms. Its two most prominent members had been brought low by Democratic administrations. Hoover, driven from the White House 2 decades earlier by Franklin Roosevelt.
Driven from the White House.
With
stones and chains and whips.
Kept Pennsylvania.
Yeah, you
want to guess who Hoover's partner was in this? Who are you going to put up next to Herbert Hoover in this 4th
no
of July
idea
event? General Douglas MacArthur.
Get out!
Yeah, baby!
What? Why?
Because he had just gotten fired by Harry Truman for wanting to nuke all of China and Russia,
yeah,
basically.
I mean, sure.
During the
I've
Korean
read those.
War. He was like, why don't we start a nuclear war that kills tens of millions of people in order to win in Korea? And Truman was like, oh God, you're out of your mind. You should not be in charge of fighting men anymore.
And then MacArthur said, what about freedom?
Yeah. That's what he spends the rest of his life doing.
In his defense, at the time, the military was just firing nuclear bombs into Arizona and forcing troops to walk through it in case it gave them
why don't we know? Look, we should at least nuke the enemy as much as we're nuking ourselves, right?
Absolutely. That's just fair.
That's Doug MacArthur's attitude. So he had gotten fired 2 months ago when he gets put in this committee, right? Like, he has just gotten out of the Korean War business. So he immediately goes into let's make Christianity capitalism by subverting the 4th of July to our own purposes. So these guys get joined by a bunch of different legal, like conservative right wing media figures, entertainment industry figures who are like very right wing. Bing Crosby is a member of this committee, sure. Right? Bingo.
James O'Keefe.
No, but Cecil B. DeMille.
Wait. So every time I've watched White Christmas, I've supported a fucking Nazi. God damn. damn it.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah. If he, old Blue Eyes wasn't a good man.
Jesus. Can't imagine you not just assuming that.
Cecil B. DeMille is on the committee to proclaim liberty.
Well, yeah, but of course he is.
Walt Disney is on the committee to proclaim liberty.
Again, of course he is. I just didn't know that Bing Crosby was a Nazi.
Yeah, he's pretty far right. And of course, our buddy Ronald Reagan is on the committee.
Well, yeah.
And then you've got a bunch of big business types. There's J. Howard Pugh, obviously. Harvey Firestone, Conrad Hilton, James L. Kraft. Yeah.
Harvey Firestein?
No, Firestone, the guy with the tires that exploded.
Very different, very different.
I was living in Independence Day. I was like, oh my God, how can we do this?
James L. Kraft, Henry Luce, Fred Maytag, and J.C. Penney. All of these guys are part of the committee, are hanging out with Bingo, you know, trying to do a kill democracy.
Every time you learn the history of where you shop, if it's been around for longer than 50 years, you're like, why aren't I burning this down right now? Why aren't I just lighting it on fire?
That was the question everyone briefly asked in 2020. And
there's zero reason.
Exciting times.
There's zero reason for a Hobby Lobby to still be standing. Christ. Like, zero reason.
Well, they got to house those stolen artifacts.
That
somewhere.
Is true. And now we're back to Indiana Jones.
So you wouldn't think a group of luminaries and brands with that kind of star power. You got all the big Bing Crosby and Walt Disney together finally with Douglas MacArthur. It is a dream team of dudes who sucked. But you wouldn't think, like, with that kind of, they're also dudes who are pretty good at being famous. You wouldn't think they would have needed to advertise for this sort of thing. But by God, they do. Disney, Firestone, all of these big corporate like motherfuckers take out a series of full page newspaper ads advertising all these events around the 4th of July, this like week of right wing, you know, speeches and radio programs and whatnot. Each of these full page ads focuses primarily on the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. A lot of them are just the preamble being printed. Now, you might wonder, well, that doesn't sound super right wing, right? That's just like a historical thing about the United States printing. There's nothing particularly right wing about printing the Declaration of Independence.
No, wrong. Yeah. You have to read it for it not to be right wing. If you print it and you don't read it, it's right wing.
It's a little.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is essentially what they're doing, because they want people to read the preamble. They don't want people to read the Declaration of Independence. If you read the Declaration of Independence, a lot of it is very specific critiques about shortcomings of the British government, right?
Sure.
Their problem is a lack of good government. They are, as you might guess by the fact that they made a government, they're not anti-government. And again, evidence of this is that when the revolution was won, a lot of people who had signed that declaration went on to crush a libertarian uprising in their own country with cannons, you know, like they were not.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, reasonably speaking, only two people have actually read the Declaration, and that's King George and Nick Cage, and those are the only two.
To be fair, Nicolas Cage read the back of it.
He did. He did not even the front of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, quoting just the preamble of the Declaration of Independence allows these guys to turn the Declaration from what it is, which is a list of political grievances rooted in a specific place and time, and the solution of those grievances was a kind of government. It allows them to ignore that and just turn through the using only the preamble, turn the Declaration into a manifesto of Christian libertarianism, where the only focus is in the Founding Fathers wanting to remove government, right? That's not, the Declaration isn't the Founding Fathers saying we don't want to have government because free enterprise is best. It's them saying this government is shit and we want to do a better job, right? You don't want that thought to go into people's head. In his book, One Nation Under God, Cruz quotes one version of this ad paid for by the San Diego Gas and Electric Company. It told its readers, quote, "These words are the stones upon which man built history's greatest work, the United States of America. Remember them well." And the words of the preamble were accompanied by helpful analysis by the good people at the Committee to Preserve Liberty. "All men are created equal. That means you are as important in the eyes of God as any man brought into this world. You are made in his image and likeness. There is no superior man anyway." All right, so we're anywhere.
Stop
so,
right there. Yeah, period.
Fine.
The end.
Fine.
We're all going to go home. Mm-hmm. End of show. That guy was great. Let's get out of here.
"They are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Here is your birthright, the freedom to live, work, worship, and vote as you choose. These are rights no government on earth may take from you, except for the government established by this declaration, which didn't let most people vote. But like,
I would like more rights than those. Thank you.
Yeah. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Here is the reason for and the purpose of government. Government is but a servant, not a master, not a giver of anything. Right? Now we get into the right-wing propaganda. Deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. In America, the government may assume only the powers you allow it to have. It may assume no others. Okay. Right? Subtle piece of propaganda, though. This is very smart. What they are doing here is recontextualizing and repurposing history into something very different than what it was, in order to inculcate a specific political ideology in the population. And this works pretty fucking good. If you want to talk about how successful replacing the real...
Look at the world today. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
really look at where we're living.
What are you fucking talking about? Oh, we need evidence. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. Do you know how obvious it is? You use the word inculcate.
Mm-hmm. I did. I want to quote to talk about like how successful specifically
the evidence that this worked is both of us have podcasts.
Both of us have podcasts. Yeah. But also it's interesting to me that the preamble remains a really common piece of right wing propaganda in a lot of shit that's been happening very recently. I'm going to quote from Jacqueline Keeler's book Standoff, which is about the Bundy occupation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. Quote, on January 19th, 2016, Ryan Payne, a Malheur occupier and founder of Operation Mutual Aid, a militia coalition based in Montana, read the preamble of the Declaration of Independence at a community meeting held at the refuge. Political instruction in the philosophical beliefs that brought anti-government activists together in armed rebellion against the feds was common at both the refuge and during Clive and Bundy's standoff in Bunkerville, Nevada, 2 years earlier. And this is interesting because it's not just the preamble. A lot of these militiamen carry pocket constitutions, right? That is a huge thing among chunks of the libertarian right. And the specific pocket constitutions that are everyone at fucking Malheur has are produced by the National Center for Constitutional Studies, which was founded by a Mormon elder named W. Cleon Skousen. Yeah, baby. Yeah, Skousen's in the housing.
Skousen
was a founder of the John Birch Society, who are directly talking with Fifield and with NAM. They are working with NAM right now. Welch is a member. Well, like, yeah.
And Skousen got he had to remove himself from the Birch Society because he was too extreme.
This is the guy who was too shitty for the worst people ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is important to note that Skousen is very much copying Fifield and his organization in handing out these pocket constitutions. This is where this idea comes from, that we can repurpose pieces of American history for this specific end without a great thing for us is going to be taking these historical documents, adding our own context to them, right? Adding essays to them, explaining them in a way that makes our ideology seem like the only possible American thing. That starts here with the Committee to Preserve Liberty and their effort to recontextualize the 4th of July. And obviously, as we've talked about, it's been a tremendously successful thing.
Right. So yeah. Basically what you're saying is that we need a fucking time machine.
If I had a time machine, whoa. I would get up to some shit.
Yeah, the present would be fucked up if you had a time machine.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of folks just missing.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy. Starting. No, that's not a good joke to tell. Back to the 4th of July. In the lead up to the day itself, Reverend Fifield gave a big radio service wherein he introduced the people of the United States to the Committee to Proclaim Liberty. He told them its purpose was to, quote, revive a custom long forgotten in America, spiritual emphasis on the 4th of July. They held another big essay contest, soliciting sermons on the theme Freedom Under God. Fifield encouraged ministers to read the sermons they wrote to their own congregations on Independence Sunday, July 1st. Now, I want to hone in on this a bit because it's brilliant. Earlier, Pugh had criticized Fifield for not directly controlling what ministers wrote and said in their sermons, but Data had told the NAM that handing
sorry,
out...
Sorry, that's just a sad, fucked up criticism.
It is fucked up,
just
yeah.
Like, hey, listen, you're not controlling what everyone's saying, you piece of
bro,
shit.
Hey, bro, get your pastors on a leash.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yes. But what the fuck?
At the same time, while like Pugh is frustrated by this, NAM's data shows that the pre-written sermons and stuff that like that they're handing out don't work. They sound too much
too
like propaganda.
Thing.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So Fifield gets 17.
And the Koch brothers are right fucking there, man.
Well, Fred Koch was founding member of the John Birch Society.
Exactly. Yep.
So
yeah.
Fifield gets 17,000 ministers to write their own sermons on a theme that he's chosen and like ties that to the 4th of July, right? Has all of these ministers, thousands of them around the country, giving variations of the same speech on a thing he's picked on the 4th of July. Yeah.
That'll put it in your own words kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's how you copy in high school.
Yeah, it's like a high school essay contest.
How you cheat.
Yeah, it's like the winner gets to go to fucking D.C. Yeah,
yeah, the winner gets to help overthrow democracy and institute an oligarchic dictatorship. Yeah.
I mean, you put it like that's a bad thing, but that is an accomplishment.
It is an accomplishment. Look, I'm not taking anything from these dudes. They're good at what they're doing. So I'm going to quote next from Kevin Cruz again. These sermons were amplified by a program broadcast that same evening over CBS's national radio network. Cecil B. DeMille worked with his old friend Fifield to plan the production, giving it a professional tone and attracting an impressive array of Hollywood stars. Jimmy Stewart served as master of ceremonies, while Bing Crosby and Gloria Swanson offered short messages of their own. The preamble to the Declaration was led by Lionel Barrymore, who had posed
for
the...
Oh, I thought it was going to be Mickey Mouse.
This is what happens when you make a banker the protagonist of one of the most famous movies of all time. Mm. That's entirely, it's all, I know you've got very good points about all of these people.
I mean,
but I'm going to blame Jimmy Stewart alone.
It's all him. Not just a banker, but a banker who, to his credit, flew a bunch of bombing missions over Germany in World War II, and then, to less of his credit, was an active general during the Korean War of the Air Force.
Ooh, that's not good.
Don't get me started on Mickey's history.
And Mickey Mouse has killed a lot of people. But you know what? Mickey doesn't get up in the sky to do it. Mickey uses a knife.
That's true.
So Lionel Barrymore, Drew Barrymore's either father or grandfather, I forget right now.
What?
But yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah,
there's
Lionel
like
Barrymore.
10 people alive. I'm sick of this shit. We need more characters in the human race.
You do complain about that.
I complain about it.
He poses to like help advertise this event where he's, you know, all these famous people are giving speeches and he's reading the preamble. He poses holding a giant quill and looking at a piece of parchment with the words, "Freedom under God will save our country." Again, we don't think about what under God means so much, but like this is a very specific political line because freedom under God, they have made mean a very specific thing, right? That you have the freedom to be poor. That's what it means. Freedom under God to these guys is you have the freedom to be poor and you're not free if there aren't poor people. That's
I'm confused.
Literally
it sounds
what
like
this
you
means.
Aren't. It sounds like you are not thankful for your freedom, sir.
Yeah, I mean, that's where all this gets started. So the broadcast featured choral performances of the America as well as Heritage, an epic poem composed by a former leader of the U.S. Chamber of Congress, General Matthew Ridgway. Yeah.
Whites are great.
Yeah.
Whites are great.
It's dope.
Everybody knows it's fun to be eight.
The guy who takes over commanding American forces in Korea. Lionel Barrymore's great uncle to Drew Barrymore. Thank you, Sophie. Somewhere in there. So Matthew Ridgway, who's the commander of American forces in Korea, the guy who replaces fucking famous right wing shithead Douglas MacArthur. He's also a right wing shithead, and he gives a keynote address from Tokyo as part of this like big fucking 4th of July brouhaha. And he tells America that the founding fathers were motivated to do what they did by their Christianity. You know, don't read Thomas Paine and the whole book he wrote about how he doesn't like Christianity. They did it all for Jesus. You know, that was the genesis of America. So this is the kind of propaganda that sticks in people's hearts and souls, and it becomes central to their being. The genius here, and this is where Pew and the NAM come into it, was that wrangling beloved celebrities like Jimmy Stewart and Bing Crosby, like that's their, like Fifield doesn't have that kind of power on his own, but the NAM does. They've got all these fucking inroads everywhere. And this whole gigantic event solidifies the 4th of July as the most sacred day in the right-wing religious calendar, right? And as a side benefit to the corporations who sponsor the show, the Christian libertarian ideology Fifield expands upon over the airwaves also gets to hitch a ride into people's souls. It becomes part of the 4th of July and part of the celebration of the 4th of July and part of the lexicon we use to talk about freedom gets infected with this thing that he's invented.
One of the things that I absolutely despise most, more than anything else, is finding out some horrific tradition is only like my dad could have not dealt with it, you know, like every time I go to a baseball game and there's a flyby by shit, I'm like, the war's over, man. Like, I want to start a war. Like, it's that kind of fury at, like, we're past this, man.
Yeah, why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this?
We didn't do this for a long time.
The information that you have just provided, Jordan, will make it so he can't watch the hot dog eating contest.
I will never watch that hot dog eating contest.
I will watch. Yeah, I mean, I've never watched one and never will again, but certainly extra not now.
And you can tell Jamie Loftus I said that.
Oh,
Sophie
I will.
Is sending her an email right
yeah,
now.
You better fucking do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
I will.
So the celebrations, all of this shit we've talked about is the days leading up to the 4th of July. On the 4th itself, the Committee to Proclaim Liberty coordinates Americans in nearly every state to all ring their church bells simultaneously for 10 minutes. I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
No, it's great. It's great. No,
in Los Angeles, the city government uses the air raid sirens like to do this. Like they join in with LA's air raids. This is the first time Los Angeles's air raid sirens are used.
That'd probably scare people who didn't know.
Yeah, right. Why would you do this? There's a Cold War on. What is wrong with you? We are fighting in Korea. Everyone has nukes now. One newspaper.
That's one of the things that has like changed so much from growing up in small town middle America is like, when I was young, a large group of people chanting the same thing was good.
Yeah.
Now that we're where we are, if a large group of people chant the same thing, I'm running in the opposite direction. I don't care if it's USA or like fucking Sylvanesso is great. I'm out of here because there's Nazis there.
Mm-hmm. Sophie also just muted me for a second. I just want everyone to know she's trying to steal my voice and my free speech. I'm being canceled by the radical left. So the fucking Los Angeles uses their air raid sirens to celebrate the 4th of July, and a newspaper writer describes it as, in the most fascist line I have ever heard in a newspaper, a scream as wild and proud as that of the American Eagle.
Yeah!
You love to hear it. Daniel, can we get an air raid siren so everyone can hear a scream as loud and proud as the American Eagle? Oh, that was a good air raid siren. Not Daniel. Chris. Sorry.
Beautiful.
Chris.
Just so beautiful.
The whole thing was a big hit. The Committee to Proclaim Liberty organizers wrote in a later analysis that, quote, the very words freedom under God have added to the vocabulary of freedom a new term. It is a significant phrase to people who know that everybody from Stalin on down is paying lip service to freedom until its root meaning is no longer apparent. The term freedom under God provides a means of identifying and separating conditions which indicate pseudo-freedom or actual slavery from those of true freedom. So if you think freedom is not having to worry about going broke because you can't pay for healthcare, or if you think freedom is not starving to death, you're a slave. That's slavery.
That's a really good point that I hadn't thought of it in that way before.
Mm-hmm.
But since you just said it, I'm convinced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Guess I'm going to go on to vote for Ronald Reagan in a couple decades.
It's really weird. It's really weird how you convinced me of a point that you were in opposition to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So things start to move very quickly after this point. This is a huge hit. So in 1953, the U.S. has its first ever national prayer breakfast. We could talk a lot about the family here, but you know what the theme of the first prayer breakfast is?
Hot dog eating contest.
Almost, basically.
He's funnier.
Government under God. There's that term, under God again. In 1954, the Pledge of Allegiance has the words under God added to it. Congress adds In God We Trust to our stamps in 1954 and to paper money in 1955. In 1956, In God We Trust becomes the first official motto of the United States. All of this happens right after this 4th of July event.
That's not fair.
It's really not fair.
No, that's fucked up. Like, if my dad didn't have to say under God, I should retroactively not have to have said it when I said the Pledge of Allegiance.
Furious. And if someone suggests that you shouldn't have to say it, your dad's going to be pissed.
I'm going
to
be furious.
You know who else is going to be pissed?
He will be furious.
The hot dog eating contest people?
Well, yeah, but they're always angry. No, who's going to be pissed is the products and services that support this podcast, because they're such good deals that they're losing money on every sale. You know, they're really, because of the deals that we're giving you, it's really hurting them. So, you know,
they
have
the freedom to go broke.
They do have that freedom. They have that freedom to be poor, you know?
Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
And we're back. We are. You and I, me, us, all here together, talking.
Hey, listen, I just want to say, now that we're back, you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you.
I'm sorry for all the mean things I said about you off air your face.
That's okay. I cried. I got through it. Sophie says most of that stuff to me every morning. That's how I wake up every day.
And also, I'd like to apologize that I kept telling you that Hoover won Pennsylvania during the break.
You did say that about 130 times. Yeah, while Jordan was just cursing at me in an unbroken stream.
I don't know what came over me, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're a good team.
Yeah, it's good stuff. We'll just make that be the ad break next time. So Reverend James Fifield has accomplished something amazing here, right? Like, under God is fucking everywhere. And now we all know the horrible, fucked up ideological reasons behind those words. In his write-up on this whole fucking thing, Eckhart Toy Jr. notes, quote, many of Fifield's letters, both to Pugh and Crane, ended with a request for funding. Fifield continuously presented himself as selfless and living a simple life, even though both his church and his spiritual mobilization were perpetually in a state of need. As Fifield asked for donations and monetary interventions to save himself financially, he and his staff directed very few funds or outreach initiatives to the poor. They are spending it
we're the tip of the spear. I just want to let you, but we need your money to continue fighting the good fight. We're gonna
he's pioneering it.
Yeah.
But he's just talking directly to rich guys. Now, Toy quotes from a letter an employee of spiritual mobilization sent to Crane of the NAM in 1953. Quote, basic to your thought in this area is the concept of vast majorities who cannot take care of themselves. They are too foolish, too weak, too gullible. You and a few others who really care feel the need to scurry around and get government to force somebody else to do something for these poor folk. Tolstoy made an observation that bears directly on your little crusade. He said, people will do everything for the poor except get off their backs. This is the job for the government and libertarian thought, to destroy parasitism by pulling people off their victims' back. For this, we need a strong government, strong enough to do the job. So you might...
That's the good stuff.
You might kind of find that incoherent. Like, we need a strong enough government to do the job of destroying the government. Yeah.
Sir, start one more time. A what?
It's very funny. It's also funny because Fifield himself is absolutely a parasite on the rich. Like, he's just sucking money away from them.
Totally.
And they get a lot for it early on. But it doesn't work as well after this big 4th of July thing. That's kind of like his high point.
You mean Fifield's?
Yeah, Fifield's high point.
Well, like, he did his part.
He did his part, like, right? And
he's not necessary after that.
That's exactly right.
And my God, you are really getting to a Tribe Called Quest, aren't you?
Sure. What?
Five feet. Come on now. Come on.
I didn't catch that.
What am I, a monster? Am I a bad person?
No, it just wasn't a good joke.
I'm glad you said it, Dan.
Yeah. Fair point.
Being the hero once again.
I have the freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm. You also have the freedom to go broke when you get cancer. We have glorious freedom here, all of us. So the Reverend Fifield, one of the funny things about him is that for all of his love of capitalism and shit, every time he tries to do a capitalism, he's terrible at it. He launches a television show based on his, you know, ramblings that does not do well. People do not like the Reverend Fifield Hour.
What about his shoe line?
He doesn't try doing that, but he does, like, he has like this land deal. He has like a couple of different business deals that all fall through, that he uses the money his foundation's getting from rich guys to try to fund, right? And they start to get angry because they're like, well, he's just using our money to try to get rich himself, and he's bad at it. And that's the real unforgivable sin to rich guys.
I was gonna say,
you do not have the freedom to be bad at getting rich.
Yeah. You can take our money and get rich. You cannot take our money and not get rich.
Now, the good news is that spiritual mobilization had already done the one thing that it had meant to do, which is kick open the doors of religious politicization and tie Christianity to the free market in the hearts of millions of Americans. Just a few years after that famous 4th of July, his work had gone so far beyond him that he had been marginalized. His final straw with the Pugh brothers was a propaganda film, which they considered weak. In 1957, Fifield quit spiritual mobilization altogether, and it drifted along on fumes for a few years before it died out. The cause it had birthed, however, sailed right ahead. Pugh and Crane found a new minister to invest in, one who was much better with money. You want to guess what this guy's name was?
Creflo A. Dollar.
Not quite yet. Not
fucking
quite yet.
Marjo. Like, I don't know.
It's not quite. I do love Marjo. No,
is it the bagel? I kind of love Marjo.
He's very charming. No, it's Billy Graham.
Yes.
Oh, not
of course.
It's Billy
God
Graham, baby.
So we could have just gone back in time and just slapped that guy in the face and it would all been fine.
We'd have to go back further. There's actually three boats. If I could go back in time with a chain gun, there's three boats I'm taking care of, you know?
Three boats.
Yeah. All right.
That sounds like a Coen Brothers movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three boats sunk in the middle of the ocean by a time traveler with a Gatling gun. Yeah. Billy Graham, Pugh and Crane decide to back him next after they kind of abandon Fifield. You know, he has to leave, spiritual mobilization, yada, yada, yada. Very sad story for the asshole. Here's Eckhart Tolle again. The mission was to spread the free market conservative message through religion had only just begun, and in many ways, Graham further nuanced its delivery. As Graham himself put it to J. Howard Pugh, God has given me the ear of millions. He has given to you large sums of money. It seems to me that if we can put these two gifts of God together, we could reach the world with the message of Christ.
Oof.
Billy Graham, oof. Much smarter guy. As a business proposition, supporting Graham was a win-win. Graham's ministry would flourish, business interests would be advanced by a key opinion shaper, and unlike Fifield, Graham would not continually pester Pugh about his dire financial situation and the need for more funds. Graham was a public figure who ingratiated himself into the politics of America, promoting political involvement at his revival meetings. He had preached from the steps of the U.S. Capitol in 1952, and he also had a close relationship with President Eisenhower. So, much better commie? Bet. Yes, the famous communist agent, Eisenhower. Yeah.
Be like Ike, communism.
Well, that's also, too, because the very early on, the NAM, there's a lot of ties with the John Birch Society, but that's not the best way to get your message out to a lot of people. Billy Graham's a much cuddlier figure. He's got a lot more people that are going to like Billy Graham than fucking Welch, you know?
Well, and his stakes are more real to most people, like your eternal soul
and
what have you.
He's got T-bones, he's got... Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So flank.
Yeah.
The first big collaboration between Pugh and Graham was a little publication you might have heard about, Jordan. You might know about this. Christianity Today.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. That's, yeah. This is how it starts.
And
it
My family was more Focus on the Family by the Dobsons, but I know Christianity.
And it's a different magazine now, but it was originally, number one, it was originally just for ministers. And it was founded by Graham and Pugh to solidify ties between the right wing and organized Christianity. Pugh explained, quote, Christianity Today is a magazine, conservative in its theology and beamed directly to the ministerial mind. Mind, those of us who have given years of study to this problem realize that it is just as important to have conservatism in theology as it is to have conservatism in economics and sociology, if America is to remain great.
Yeah, that was true. That was true.
Yeah.
They just nailed it. You know, sometimes a lot of people are like, they're bad people, but I'm telling you, they nailed it. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about ministersonly.com, their dating website that they had underneath it. That really nailed it.
Yeah. Ministers.com and Priestfuck, which was its slightly trashier cousin.
That was their equivalent of the Fuck a Bear.
The Fuck a Bear workshop, the Catholic Fuck a Bear workshop. We don't need to get into that. That's going to get unsettling quickly. So from the beginning, both Graham and especially Pugh took pains to ensure they could not be tied too closely to the magazine. They didn't want it to be seen as an overtly political look, even though it was. Despite claiming a hands-off attitude, Pugh constantly complained about the editorial direction chosen by the man they picked to run the magazine, Dr. Bell. In 1958, Pugh hired the Opinion Research Bureau to conduct one of the first Pugh surveys, although it was not yet called a Pugh survey. Carried out on the readers of Christianity Today, it found that nearly 30% of ministers still described themselves as something besides fundamentalist or conservatives. 14% even called themselves liberal. Now, this might be due to the fact that Christianity Today was blatant right-wing propaganda, so only a few progressives read it. Billy Graham probably knew this, but he was savvy enough to see how this data could be used to peer pressure more ministers into moving right. He wrote, I believe this poll should be widely publicized. So many of our ministers are liberal only because they think it's the popular thing to be. If they could understand that the vast majority of American clergy are conservative, it could swing hundreds of others over to the conservative position. It would also probably have a great impact on our seminaries if properly distributed.
This isn't the point, but again, your character fell apart in the middle of that impression.
I know. I'm not a voice actor.
Strong, but it just went...
I just kept thinking, like, what if the DARE program was more oriented around Christian nationalism? Like, if all of these pastors had peer pressured each other into doing drugs, I feel like we would have all had a better
life.
We
would have been in an incredible place as a country. LSD acid is being discovered around this time.
It was right
amazing.
Around this time. It would have blown everyone's
mind. If only Rogan was around back then.
If only Rogan was
Christianity today is literally just sheets of acid inside of a magazine. And obviously today it is a different thing. In fact, Christianity Today is such a centrist magazine now that Donald Trump called it far left.
Sure.
Obviously, getting good data overall and where priests, ministers, and reverends are politically is complicated. It's not an easy group to just certify, like survey all of them. But it's worth noting that while roughly 18% of Americans are white evangelical Protestants, they make more than 43% of what, yes, Pew Research calls staunch conservatives and 39% of so-called mainstream Republicans. So there's a debate to be had as to like whether or not it's broadened or narrowed the electoral kind of possibilities of conservatives in America. But as a result of everything we've talked about this week, the center of the of organized conservatism in the U.S. are white evangelical Protestants, the most reliable voting bloc, the most organized one. And it all started here. Good time.
No. Refuse. Mm-hmm. Rewrite this story and make it less sad.
Mm-hmm. Make it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I get a time machine, I can do the fun version of this story.
That's, you know, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just a lot of people not wanting to.
I just hate that when stuff isn't old enough.
Oh, it's kind of from a relatable time period.
Yeah. I can't like walk over to my grandfather and be like, hey, you remember when things weren't shit? Like, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. Like, I should have to go way further back in time.
Yeah, this thing that seems like so
entrenched.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like from 1700.
The heartening thing about that is because it's not that old, we could do different stuff. Like, we could make it be different as a country.
Sure,
we
had but at that a certain option. Point of time, Christianity wasn't that old, and now it's fucking old. You know what I mean?
But also, yeah, Robert,
that's also what could happen.
Robert, to your point, though, too, like, you know, if your story has taught me anything, if we're going to shift this back, we need billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And we need charismatic preachers.
Yep.
And those are things that I don't think we have access to.
I mean, accept being both at any time as long as everybody else takes care of it.
I know George Soros listens to the podcast.
Sure.
George, buddy, we got an idea. Mm-hmm. We're gonna recontextualize. What holiday can we take over?
Arbor Day?
Yeah, no. we're gonna make
you're right. Arbor Day is not ours
you're
to
right.
take over.
We're gonna make Memorial Day about
car
finding,
sales.
I was gonna
what?
Say, well, that's what these guys would do. We're gonna make Memorial Day about.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought that was President's Day. I thought we were branching out. You know?
What if we made Memorial Day the center of celebration, breaking in to the house of the Alex Azar, the former Health and Human Services Secretary, and taking all of the ill-gotten gains he made from jacking up the price of insulin? That could be the new memorial to the dead of the insulin crisis. All we need is a couple $100 million to really get this going. And
that's
we can do
fair.
A deep fake of Bing Crosby and Jimmy Stewart. We can recontextualize them too.
Listen, Jimmy. Both of us were kind of milquetoast mm-hmm. before. You say Bing Crosby, I'm in.
Well, I was in on holograms.
I don't see why we shouldn't go to Alex Azar's house and take his take his cars and his nice golden things. I'm Jimmy Stewart. Yeah.
See, now that was a character you
now
committed
that's
to.
A
Thank
bit.
You.
There you
I
go,
did my best
friend.
There. I can't. Well, I'm Bing Crosby, and I think you should go to Alex Azar's house and take his car.
Every time I think about doing
go to
a
Alex
Bing
Azar's
Crosby,
and take his A's car.
Every time I think about doing a Bing Crosby, it transfers into Yogi Bear instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Just that constant, like, hey, we're gonna, hey, boo boo, mm-hmm. like it's so fast.
Yep.
There's not a lot of distance
of the Sackler family towed into the middle of the ocean on a barge.
Mm-hmm.
We can
and
do
of course
this.
A picnic basket.
Hey boo boo, we gotta take down the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bing Crosby and fucking the bear. Ah, goddamn it! I spaced on the name. I ruined the joke. Now it's over. Well,
no, you're great.
You guys got any pluggables to plug?
We have our podcast, knowledgefight.com,
Indeed.
Where that lives.
Yeah. I just want to aggressively promote my book on this one. Yeah. It's called The Quiet Part Loud.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You can download it for free at The Quiet Part Loud. Anything you want, just read it or don't. I really just put it out there and it was great. Anyways, it's The Quiet PartLoud.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's a passive aggressive plug.
Just want to aggressively promote my book.
There anyway. You go.
Yeah. Good.
See, that's how you do it. That's how you plug. You're learning.
I'm trying.
You're learning. Soon you'll be as good a pitch man as the reincarnated digital ghosts of Jimmy Stewart and Bing Crosby.
I'm just looking for that level of sales. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, soon, coming soon.
Yeah. Anytime.
Lionel Barrymore comes back and tells people to rob Bank of America locations.
Mickey Mouse takes up arms.
Yeah. Mickey Mouse fighting in the mountains to make a Zapatista-like colony in Appalachia.
Minnie, I'll be back over after the war is finished.
We could do it, everybody. We could do it. All we need is a couple $100 million. So
now I'm in my head reading Civil War letters in Mickey Mouse's voice.
And that would be the rest of your evening.
We burnt a caravan bringing ammunition to the government troops. Dearest Liza, my love for you burns as every night.
All right. Well, that should get us some fun fan art. Okay. Yep. That's the episode. Have a good week, everybody.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code iHeart for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.